One of the things I think is really important about doing comparative scholarship is that it opens your eyes to see things that you didn't see before. We think about the temple for modern Latter-day Saints today, we tend to think of it, this is a place where you come, it's quiet, it's very clean, but it's very different than the Old Testament temple experience. When you go there, you're bringing an animal, the animal's killed. It's a very different experience from our temple worship, but it's also really similar to what we do in sacrament meeting, especially fast and testimony meeting. And of course, it might be a little louder too if you've got a lot of kids in your ward, which I do.
We're keeping it loud for our ward.
Welcome to another episode of Conversations with Interpreter. I'm one of your hosts, Avram Shannon.
And I'm Thora Shannon.
Today, we're very lucky to have Dr. Ryan Davis on the show with us, who's going to be talking about comparing the ancient temple with testimony meetings. So, as a bio for Ryan Conrad Davis received a BA in Ancient Near Eastern Studies from Brigham University. And actually, Ryan and I were students together many, many years ago now.
Yes, we were.
Not that many.
it was long enough. An MA from Vanderbilt University in the Hebrew Bible and a PhD in the Hebrew Bible and Ancient Near East from the University of Texas at Austin. Ryan specializes in the prayers and rituals of ancient Israel and ancient Mesopotamian culture. He has taught as an adjunct instructor in the Department of Ancient Scripture at Brigham University in Provo since 2015. Welcome to the show, Ryan.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So today we're going to talk with you about this paper you gave in 2018 as part of a conference for Interpreter. And the title of your paper is Bearing Testimony in Hebrew, a comparison of ancient Israelite temple rituals with modern Latter-day Saint fast and testimony meetings. It's a long title, but a very short article, so you should go read it. And I thought that it had some really good points to bring up, so we're excited to talk to you today about it.
So can you, as we talk about, can you give us kind of the brief of what it's about and then kind of talk a little bit? So how did you come to compare sort of the ancient temple with modern testimony meetings?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I feel like my paper is pretty much summarized by the title that was so long. But again, when we think about the temple for modern Latter-day Saints today, we tend to think of it, this is a place where you come, it's quiet, it's very clean. But it's very different than the Old Testament temple experience, where when you go there, you're bringing an animal, the animal's killed, the priests are wearing white clothing, and there's a lot of sounds and smells, it's outside. People are praying. And so it's a very different experience from our temple worship.
Yeah.
But it's also really similar to what we do in sacrament meeting, especially fast and testimony meeting. And of course, it might be a little louder too if you've got a lot of kids in your ward, which I do.
we're keeping it loud for our ward. But yeah, I feel like a lot of times people will compare ancient temple with our modern temple rituals, but not so much with fast and testimony meetings. So I think it's really interesting you went there, but it was, I mean, I feel like it's one of those articles you read it and you're like, how did I always not think this? Because it's so obvious, but until somebody points it out to you, it's not in your mind, you know?
And that's one of the things I think is really important about doing comparative scholarship is that it opens your eyes to see things that you didn't see before. I served my mission in South Korea, and after 2 years of being in Asia, enjoying it, and then coming home, home was different.
Sure.
I saw it differently. And, you know, things hadn't really changed, but I suddenly started wondering why things were the case and seeing that they were very different in Korea. And the same thing happens with scholarship when I look at things in the ancient Near East. I try to put myself in their shoes as much as possible. And then when I kind of resurface and come back to reality, I realize like, oh, I see things a little differently than I did before.
Yeah, and I like that, especially as we think through both, I think things are that continuity plus an applicability, right? In some cases, even your paper, they're like, oh yeah, this is something where we can say this is a comparison. We can see how these are doing kind of from the same impulse. And sometimes you can say, oh, there's actually maybe even a line here that God intends us to be seeing with this.
Yeah.
So that's great. I really think that I appreciate, again, your work in comparative stuff is really, I think, useful in that sense. So
you mentioned in your paper that there's this relationship cycle between ancient worshipers and their gods. So can you elaborate on that? Let's get started with the ancient side, I guess, first before we move to Latter-day Saint side.
Yes.
And really talk about what that looked like for worshipers of Jehovah.
Yeah. When you think about, there's no word for religion in biblical Hebrew or in ancient Israel.
Ancient
yeah,
world.
Yeah. Almost anywhere in antiquity, you know?
I remember when I found that out, I went to a reading that they did with Avram's PhD, and I would tag along. And guess I'm still tagging along. One of the professors brought that up, and I was flabbergasted. I'm like, what do you mean there's no word religion? It's everywhere. And then learning that comes from religieuse, from monks and nuns, and it's like medieval modern word, really, I think, explains how they thought of religion, which was not that it was a separate thing that you joined or that was separate to your life. It was everywhere in
your
life.
Yes. And thinking about it in that sense, if we're going to kind of distill it into think about religion in ways that we do, how would we describe what they do as religion? It centers around a relationship with God. And so in cultures around Israel, they're, of course, worshiping other gods. But for Israel, religion would be about creating and maintaining their relationship with Jehovah. And so we think about this relationship cycle that they go through. One is a cry for help. You ask for help. Then there's his answer. And then there's a thanksgiving that's given in return. And that's kind of at the heart of their relationship with God. You see it in the Psalms. One of the most common psalm types is called a cry for help, where you ask for help. And then when he does answer, there's another type of psalm, not as common as the cry for help, but it's the Thanksgiving psalm, which is what you tell not only God, but those around you. You tell them about what God has done for you, that he heard your prayer and he rescued you when you needed it. And so that's kind of at the heart of both for ancient Israel, how they saw their relationship with God, but also in cultures around Israel as well.
I think that's intriguing in this notion of thinking about, because as you already alluded to the very beginning here with this comparative notion, their culture is different, right? They do things differently. They understand things differently. But this notion of this relational idea, I think, is so, I think, relevant for us in the modern age.
Yes.
But also, you see it in the law, right?
I was thinking about how, the big moment of covenant is God's I will be your God and you will be my people. It's this relationship.
Yes.
It's not I exist or you need to believe in me. It's that I am your God. I am taking care of you. We are in this relationship together.
Yes, and I think for us, when we think about the word God, and we treat it as a proper name. And so when we think to say that someone is your God, or to say that God is your God, doesn't seem like you're saying much.
Yeah, almost, it's like a tautology, right?
Right, it doesn't make any sense. But for them, it's better for us to think about the word God like we think about the word mom or dad. Because just because someone is a mom or a dad doesn't mean they're your mom or your dad.
Sure.
And it's the same for God in the Old Testament. It doesn't mean much for him just to be God. What it means is when it means something different when he's your God and becomes your God when you reach out to him and he answers your prayer. And that's when you give thanksgiving back to him, you're telling him that he is your God.
So you already talked a little bit about how the ancient temple looks different from our modern one, and it has a lot of noise, a lot of blood, a lot of animal sacrifice. Can you talk about how when you are giving thanks, you talk about these Thanksgiving Psalms, what would that look like in terms of what you were doing at the temple as a regular worshiper, perhaps?
That's a great question. We're a little light on the details is the real answer.
I know. I wish that somebody had written, this is exactly what we do at the temple.
Yes. But one thing is interesting from what we understand is that when you show up at the temple, and again, if you're bringing a Thanksgiving offering, this would be because you have asked for help, he's answered, and you want to express this thanks, and you bring an animal. And as you come into the temple, we assume that there's also going to be people there that are also asking for help. And so whether or not these are maybe Levites that are praying for you, or maybe they're praying with you, we're not really sure. But there'll be both people asking for help and then people coming with praise to give and an offering. And so it's, as you're in the temple, you're kind of hearing both people that are pleading, just hoping God will come into their lives. And then you've got other people that are coming and saying, God was there for me. Keep the faith. He's trustworthy. He's faithful. If you keep hoping, keep believing, he'll be there for you. And so the temple, in a way, that there would be quite a bit of noise. I mean, you can't be reverent when you're, I mean, there's a lot of things happening.
I think we really need to redefine reverence.
Yes.
Is not silence. We've talked a lot about this because we have a lot of kids. But rather, reverence is like this attitude that you're doing. And sometimes it is silent, right? And that is great. But sometimes it looks like a lot of noise, maybe kid noise, maybe killing animals on an altar noise, like whatever your religious circumstances will dictate.
We have one kid who is, you know, we have these kids. He's a little boy. And I don't think he sat still for more than 30 seconds since the day he was born.
His favorite move is to get underneath like chairs and like crawl like down a row. If he's in church and he's under, like he'll get under the bench and start going down the row. Like,
and it's really easy to, as his father even, to say, just sit down, be quiet, whatever. But one of the things I think is most interesting about this son of mine is that of all my kids, he's actually the most likely to be listening to the speakers. I mean, all the time he'll surface up from one of his like, you know, deep dives under the row and say, why did they just say that? We're like, wait, you were listening to this while you were? And so I do think that this notion of sort of transformation, we think reverence. The reverence, yes. is, we have the song, right? It's more than just quietly sitting.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's right. But even beyond that, it's more than.
Yes.
And definitely ancient Israel. Actually, you're talking about that it would look differently. Just this morning, I was reading in 1 Samuel the story of Hannah, which,
yes,
we all know, right? And she desperately wants a child. She's, you know, it's this relationship cycle where she's asking, she's pleading. And Eli the priest says, you know, God will give what you ask for. She does, in fact, conceive a son. And when she comes back to the temple, she comes when she weans him so that she can, I guess, donate. I'm not really sure the right word, verb here.
Dedicate or consecrate, I think is the word for
her
that.
Her son,
yeah.
Samuel, to the Lord, that she brings, what is it? And when she had weaned him, she took him, I'm sorry, this is 1 Samuel 1:24. She took him up with her with three bullocks and one ephah of flour and a bottle of wine and brought him unto the house of the Lord in Shiloh, and the child was young. And they slew a bullock and brought the child to Eli, right? So it recounts this Thanksgiving offering that they are giving for their son.
Actually, again, the whole story, you see the whole cycle there. She petitions, she's heard, she offers thanks.
And she even has this whole like psalmic type
yes,
song that she gives there of,
well,
like Thanksgiving.
And you notice in that story, temple, an important part of temple worship is eating together.
Sure.
So when they go yearly, one of the things they do is they sit down and they eat. That's why Hannah's given this double portion. And then when she's upset, she doesn't eat. And so that's something that's also a little different, right? When we go to the temple, especially they don't have cafeterias in temples anymore.
I know.
Right? That eating is not something we necessarily think of, but that is something that we do. In fact, it's the most important thing we do when we attend sacrament meeting. It's a place we come to eat together.
So let's kind of shift from the ancient world.
Yes.
To like the modern then. And like, how does, so we have this ancient cycle of Thanksgiving and we have going to the temple. What does that look like? I mean, you've already alluded to it with like our sacrament meetings and our ritual. What ritual meal are we eating? I think this sounds like a primary question. Yes. Hopefully everybody knows what we're about to say.
Yes. And so again, when thinking about what's going on in the ancient temple, you're coming together in a community, you're coming together as a family, and you're both asking for help, but you're also telling others what has happened in your life. And this is what we do when we come together in sacrament meetings, right? We talk about it being a ward family, and this is a covenant community, right? When you're baptized, you make a covenant to bear one another's burdens, to be there for each other. And so we sit down and we eat this meal. And the meal is remembering something that God has done for us. This is, we're remembering what Jesus Christ did to rescue us from sin and death. And this is a much bigger thing to be thankful for than even than the things in the ancient world that they would come and bring animals for. And but this is something we do every week.
Well, and I think there's a really interesting connection that we actually do share with them, that your Thanksgiving offerings, like it's also for God saving them out of Egypt through Moses, right, out of the Exodus. And I really like that you pointed out in your paper that even kind of nested within us remembering Christ, when does Christ bring up or introduce the sacrament? And that is at the Last Supper when they are having a Passover meal where they are commemorating Moses under God bringing them out of Egypt. So it's like we're all still in that way, like it's Christ, but Christ is remembering Moses. And obviously Christ is like, you know, the fulcrum that everything
yes.
moves around. But we also have that all in there that we are still, I mean, especially this Old Testament year, I think we're all thinking Old Testament. I mean, probably some people are thinking all the time, but for everybody in the church, I just feel like we're all talking more about Old Testament topics and thinking about them and really realizing every single Sunday we have this ritual meal that remembers God saved us. He saved us out of Egypt. He saved us through Jesus Christ. He's still saving us today. He saves us when we get baptized. Like,
yes. And this meal is a sacrifice, right? So just like with the Passover, they ate it and they needed to make sure there wasn't any left over, right? Or they would burn it in the morning. And so in the same way, you know, as we eat of the body of Christ, you know, this is our sacrifice that we're sitting down and we're sharing this meal.
I think it's no mistake that, you know, we talk about, you know, and sometimes you kind of overlight it a little bit here, but those who officiate at the sacrament table are Aaronic priests. Yes. Like there seems, this actually seems to be like an intentional continuity. Like there are plenty of people in, like probably more people in that building who have, we might say in Doctrine and Covenants, superior priesthood authority, but the people who do it, and it's not, I think it's not just because of the young man, I think this is very clear, this is a sacrifice, and people who do sacrifices are Aaronic priests.
Yes.
You know, we have a member of the stake presidency in our ward, and when he attends, he sits on the stand, but he doesn't go over, like it's not like because he's a higher priest that he, or not higher priest, but higher, I'm not
authority
sure,
in the church, calling, whatever, yeah.
It's not like he goes over there and then is automatically doing it. In fact, it's never like that anywhere. It's always the Aaronic priesthood, as long as you have enough to be able to do it.
Yeah, and what's interesting also, thinking about this sacrifice and this meal, when you ate from a Thanksgiving offering, this wasn't just an offering you would eat and wouldn't take any preparation for. You had to be ready for it. You had to be ritually pure. And so this meant you had to think ahead, you know, do I need to wash? What do I need to do to make sure I can participate in this meal? And it's the same thing with the sacrament. When we sit down, this isn't a meal that we just sit down and eat without thought or preparation. We need to make sure, am I ready to eat it, right? And it doesn't need to be a long and arduous process, but it's something that it's intentional. We sit down and we make sure that it's something we're ready to eat.
And one of the things I love, something you put up either with that, you make sure you're ready. You're individual. You have this process where you make sure that you're ready. You think about what your role is, but then you don't eat it by yourself. right? That the sacrament, like the old, like these ritual meals, is a community notion that, that you are doing this together on all those who partake of it.
Yes, yes. And so kind of going on with that, that community aspect of it, we think about testimony meeting, is that after we're done sharing this meal, then we get up and we bear testimony about, and we think about, okay, what do we usually do when we bear testimony? Well, we typically go up and talk about the truths that we know.
Sure.
And I that was, I think, the thing that struck me the most, because I thought, and that's why the title of the article was Bearing Testimony in Hebrew. You think, well, what would Old Testament saints do if they got up to the microphone on Sunday? And they would give a Thanksgiving psalm. And I thought, well, why does the Thanksgiving psalm sound a little different than what we do when we bear testimony? And I realize at the deeper level, we're doing the same thing, even though our words maybe are a little different.
Sure.
So for one, we bear testimony of the truths that we've learned.
Okay.
We say, I know that God lives. I know the Book of Mormon is true. And whereas in the Old Testament, right, these Thanksgiving psalms focus more heavily on I've gained a relationship. He is my God. He was there for me when I needed it.
Yeah.
And so I thought, well, that's interesting. But one of the things that we, I guess, we typically don't always share is that knowledge that we have, the knowledge that we're bearing testimony of, came through that relationship cycle that we've talked about, that we needed help. We asked God for help and we received an answer. And the way we often describe that is by saying, now I know. Yeah.
And I think one of the things I really appreciated, learned from your article is to, again, this is, it makes sense, it's uncharitable here, but you know, you sit there, there's a lot of testimony meetings. We've all had feelings about testimony meetings, right? You know, I have a daughter who, she wants to bear testimony all the, which is great.
She's nine.
And she,
we've had to tell her only every other month because we need to give other people a chance.
But you know, we taught, you know, we're learned, you know, as missionaries out of pure testimony. And we're taught, you just tell them what, you know, God lived, Joseph Smith's a prophet, Book of Mormon's true, he loved, right? You know, mm-hmm. you know, God loves you, that kind of thing.
And those can be really powerful testimonies, but yes. I think definitely we don't tend to think of giving testimonies in terms of this relationship cycle.
But part of what your article helped me do was appreciate better the narrative testimonies. The people who actually stand up there and they're going to tell you actually we have how you got there.
Yeah.
Right? This is what I know, but let me tell you why I know it. Because actually what you suggest, I think it's really nice, is they're tapping to something a little bit ancient there when they give those narratives.
Yeah, because the Old Testament, or the Thanksgiving psalm, actually kind of has a structure to it. That's kind of how we know it's a Thanksgiving psalm, is the person will often say, you know, they'll give praise to the Lord and they'll say, the reason I can do this is because when I was in trouble, he helped me. And then they'll talk about how they were in trouble. And then at the end, they'll again offer praise.
Just for the people at home, we don't have to look it up right now. Can you tell any of us Thanksgiving hymns, like any of the numbers for the Psalms?
Yeah. Let's see here. A good one is Psalm 116, I think Psalm 30.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you want to look at those and you can see that structure at home. I definitely think looking back, even when I've borne testimony, I would say the most powerful spiritual experiences I felt is when I am like sharing that relationship cycle, right? Because it really is in those. I mean, Avram's talked about how people sometimes are like, well, I know that, you know, the gospel is true, but I show with the church. And he's like, the church is where it's at. Like, the gospel is true. But it's these relationships, these covenants we're in our communities that we really grow and learn. We can all be really righteous in a room by ourselves reading scripture, right? It's really where the rubber meets the road is when we have to be righteous with other people, whether that's our kids, our neighbors, especially in Utah, if you're living next to people in your ward. In Ohio, we loved our ward. Maybe it was a little easier, though, when they weren't your neighbors, like literal neighbors.
I definitely saw a lot more of my character flaws becoming apparent than I did before. I thought I was a pretty good person. I'm like, oh, wow, I've got a lot of work to go.
Exactly. But it's also in these relationships that we see the most growth. And I think that's not just true with like marriages or like other people, but with God, right? Like it's these moments we go through. theologically, I don't think I've learned like a ton of new theology in the last 21 years of marriage. But relationally, with God, I say 21 years of marriage, but I'm not talking about like my relationship with Oliver necessarily. But with God, like, has really, like, as we had a baby die, right? That was harder for my faith than anything else, but not because theologically I didn't understand, right? I knew our doctrine. I understood that we had to come to earth to get a body and that not everybody needs to live forever on this earth and we have mortal difficulties. But it's really hard to go through that. And I was like, I don't actually like this plan of salvation anymore. I'm out. but that was 5 years ago. Really, over the last 5 years of growth, I really have felt like, okay, like, and thankfully God doesn't give up on me or be like, Thora, you kind of failed that test. You're over. But really feeling that like relationship of coming back and saying, you know, I know, that's me talking like a Latter-day Saint. I know this is true. But like, right, like coming, like I have felt his love for me and I have felt that relationship, not just like that it's a list of facts, but like in my life going through is really where I've learned it, not just learning it off of a, you know, sheet for like my religion class in college or something.
Yeah, and one of the things that's helped me trying to think about testimony within this relationship is it's helped me realize that, you know, it's faith that saves us, right? It's actually not our testimony, you know? Like,
Yeah.
And I think that it's, you know, the first principle of the gospel is faith in the Lord Jesus Christ. And being able to help me understand what role my testimony is in that. Because a testimony are things that have happened to you in the past, knowledge you've gained, and faith is what you decide to do with it. And that's always pointed to the future. It's pointed to the present. Because of what I know, this is what I choose to do now. And it's been helpful for me.
Yeah, and I think that's, as I think about, again, my own experiences, our own whatevers, this recognition, it's really, you know, as we think about, I'm really grateful that we have these chances for us to share and say, you know, let's get up here and let's talk. Let's help with each other. Let's be part of this together. Let's give thanks. I also think that, back to our picture of the ancient temple, where you had people who were, you know, doing their thanksgivings and people doing their pleas and their, you know, and frankly, you have people doing their laments, right? Like, you know, you talk about all these various whatevers. I think part of what looking at the ancient temple and the Psalms and these things really suggests to me is maybe I need to be more willing to sometimes actually not just do the Thanksgiving part and the I know part, but also be willing to say out loud, this is the thing I'm struggling with. This is where I need help, you know? Because we do it with God, we kind of bottle it in. But of course, part of the point here is that this is, Thor mentioned, you know, the Exodus, you know, Exodus 6, I'll be your God, you'll be my people. And it's not, I'll be your God and you'll be mine. It's, I'll be your God and you'll be my people. And one of the things I think that you really brought out very nicely is, again, this notion that we're doing this stuff together.
Yeah. As you were saying that, it was reminding me in the song, Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing, in the second verse where, here I raise my Ebenezer, hither by thy help I've come. You know, and so there's this idea that you've come to a point, right? And you see what God has done for you in the past, but you're not done yet, right? There's still more to do in the future. And that's why we have this community that we're walking with. And I love thinking about the Exodus, because really this sacrifice that we sit down and we commemorate, remembering that we're rescued. Just in the same way that Israel was rescued from the Exodus, we've been rescued as well. But there's still a wilderness to walk through, right? Anytime you want to get somewhere, just like the song is telling us, there's going to be a difference between where you are and where you're trying to get to. And that distance is the wilderness. And we're going to be walking in that wilderness together. And God has promised that he'll be there with us. In fact, he provides the sacrifice for us. He provides the food that we'll never have to hunger or thirst, because we can just come to this meal, and it's always there for us. And then there'll be some of us that are having a little bit harder time on the trail, you know, than others. And some of us can, when we're doing better, can give back. And some of us, when, as Elder Holland said, when there's songs that we can't yet sing, we can just sit and listen, right? We don't necessarily have to sing the songs when we don't feel it.
Yeah.
I love that. I feel like in our modern world, there's so much individualism and that's kind of reigns supreme. But in the church, we really have this community. Like Brigham Young talked about, like we're all like honeybees, you know, Deseret. We're all part of this group that works together. You know, one honey or one bee can only collect so tiny amount of pollen that makes a tiny amount of honey, but all together we're working together. And frankly, unlike in bee colonies that are not like, you know, Zion, sometimes we're not gathering any pollen, right? Like people are bringing pollen to us because we are not doing anything. But there's a place for that. And sometimes it's functional. Like I love the organization we have for helping bring meals to families that need it or other physical help that's temporary. But also we have that with showing love to each other and even helping each other's testimonies, like being carried on the love of your ward or the love of people around you who are members of the church when you yourself don't have that faith yet on your own or you can't muster that faith in that moment. I've definitely felt that in my own life. And yeah. I know I'm not the only one who's felt that. So I love that we have that.
Which is why, again, to your whole point here, why, like for me, again, this really sharpens and put into relief why testimony meeting is so important. Why it's so vital for God's people to have a place to come together and offer thanksgiving.
Yes. And in ancient Israel, as you've mentioned, thanksgiving was not something you did by yourself. It couldn't be thanksgiving if it was just said to yourself. That's one of the big ways that missionary work would have happened in the Old Testament, right? You think about when these things happen, then you tell others about it.
Yeah.
And this is what we're supposed to be doing as Latter-day Saints. And not necessarily, we don't need to tell people things that we don't know, right?
Yeah.
But we tell them what we've experienced.
Yeah.
And that'll invite others to come and experience what we have.
I'm struck by, I was thinking about that, thinking about this idea about the gospel, right? We all know, right? Gospel means the good news, Evangelion and all these things with that. But of course, the nature of news is it's not news unless you're telling somebody. So it's not good news. Like the gospel's not the gospel unless you're sharing it with somebody else, or by definitionally even.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's great. Thanks for that. So we're almost out of time here. Any other last thoughts, things you want to think about as you think about working through this? Anything you want our listeners or our viewers to know about this?
That's a good question. Nope.
Okay.
I had a teacher once who said that anytime someone says that's a good question, it means the question's going to be better than the answer. I think that all the time because usually it means you're like, oh, yeah, I haven't thought about that.
But I guess this notion of, again, let's eat together, right? Like I love this idea both of, I mean, again, I've been in wards. This is no criticism of wards, but you know, we have ward activities and there's no like food. I'm like there's actually a reason for us to eat together just besides getting the youth there, right? There's a reason when you go on dates, you eat together, right? There's a relationship you're making.
All holidays have food, you know.
And I think
it's true. Like someone new moves into your ward, you invite them over for dinner, right? Yeah. I mean, that's how you get to know people.
You're making a relationship there.
And I will say this was, done in 2018. During the pandemic was a very sad and lonely year. And I mean, we had a big family, so we were never physically alone, but we didn't have that community with our ward. And we did Zoom, primary or Relief Society meetings or a sacrament meeting at a certain point, but it was still very alone. And thankfully in our own home, Avram has the priesthood and he could be able to bless the sacrament, which I mean, a lot of homes are doing at that time. And, or if you didn't have priesthood, I know that I had a friend who her home teachers would come and bless it on their front porch and then they would go get it.
Wow. Stories.
But like there's no community there, you know? But we did what we could. I am so glad that church opened back up.
Yes.
I am so glad we have that because I was like, I don't know for other people with the pandemic, but I was like, man, I gained a testimony that I am not doing this on my own. Like, I need young women's leaders. I need, we didn't have any young men yet, but I need young men's leaders. I need primary leaders. I need the sacrament with people where we are all covenanting at that moment together. Yes, we are in this together. And we need that.
Yes. Yeah. Amen. And
so let's never have another pandemic.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Good, good. Thanks so much for being with us today, Ryan.
Okay.
We appreciate you talking about it. It was really fun.
Yeah,
glad to be
you
here.
So much.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Conversations with Interpreter. To read the articles and scholarship discussed today, visit interpreterfoundation.org. Be sure to subscribe and share this episode with others who seek learning by study and by faith.